Leo versus Heller. Ms. Eljersma, is it?
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Kara Eljersma. I'm here on behalf of Urbano Alejo in his appeal of the dismissal of his Bivens claims against Gary Heller and Keith Heckler. Mr. Alejo argues that the dismissal of his claims against
both...
Mr. Alejo argues that the dismissals of his claims against both defendants should be reversed and the claims remanded to the district court. As to Heller, in the court below, the government argued and convinced the court that Alejo should have sought habeas relief. We now know that the district court erred by relying on precedent that had been overruled. The district court relied on Stone Bay, which was expressly overruled in DeWalt versus Carter. It seems that the government has conceded that the district court did rely on overruled precedent, and so with respect to this issue, unless the court would prefer to hear more, I'll just move on to some of the other issues that are before the court.
There is another circuit that's gone the other way than we have, hasn't it?
I'm sorry?
There's another circuit that's ruled contrary to our decision in that area?
There is a court that has considered the issue and affirmed the decision on other grounds, affirmed the lower court's dismissal on other grounds. Are you referring to the court, the case that the government pointed out?
I can't recall. It was another circuit that went contrary to our decision, right? I can't remember which circuit it was. Is that true? I'll find it and I'll get back to you. Go ahead.
Okay. In any event, DeWalt is the law, the current law of this circuit. Heller has attempted to salvage the lower court's decision by arguing in his appeal that this court should take the opportunity to affirm the lower court's decision on two other grounds, namely the lack of personal involvement and qualified immunity. The lower court twice denied summary judgment on these defenses, and we believe that on this issue, the lower court was correct. First off, this court need not address these alternative defenses because of the procedural posture in which they appear before this court. This case was erroneously, but nonetheless, dismissed without prejudice because of Alejo's failure to seek habeas relief. However, personal involvement and qualified immunity go directly to the merits, and if these defenses were valid, the court would have granted dismissal with prejudice. Heller can't seek a dismissal with prejudice now without filing a cross-appeal, notice of cross-appeal. He hasn't done that, and so this court can't enlarge the relief that was granted below under such circumstances. Even if Heller is asking this court for a straight affirmance of the dismissal without prejudice, this court should still remand. A dismissal without prejudice on the basis of the two defenses that Heller raises, this doesn't make sense. The relief just simply doesn't go with the defenses of lack of personal involvement and qualified immunity. And moreover, a dismissal with prejudice would have been what the defendants were seeking below when they were moving for summary judgment. When Heller moved for summary judgment the first time, the district court found that there were disputed issues of fact with respect to both personal involvement and qualified immunity. In the second motion for summary judgment, the court again rejected those defenses, and this court should not rule on those defenses now when there are still disputed issues of fact to be tried by the district court. If this court does decide to consider personal involvement or qualified immunity, it still should not affirm the dismissal without prejudice of Alejo's claims against Heller. As for personal involvement, Heller was personally involved in the events at issue. He knew that Alejo couldn't speak English, and he knew that Heckler was speaking English to Alejo. After he reviewed the events with Mr. Heckler, he instructed Heckler to write him up for refusing to disobey an order that he knew Alejo couldn't understand. As for qualified immunity, There's no question that a prison guard may not discipline or punish a prisoner based on race or national origin. That is what Alejo has alleged that Heller and Heckler did. Alejo put forth evidence that Heller did violate his constitutional right to be free from such discrimination. And through Alejo's dealings with Heller, Heller knew that Alejo couldn't speak English. Because Alejo only spoke Spanish, and Heller punished Alejo because he only spoke Spanish, he was punishing him based on his national origin.
Wasn't part of the punishment dealt in this case having to do with the fact that he found a razor blade in his shoe?
The punishment, there was a punishment for an incident that involved a razor blade that was
segregation, right?
That's correct. But he was removed from the pre-transfer program, and his quarters were changed as a result of as punishment for the issues that of the incident that we're appealing.
So you're not alleging segregation was the result of the closed incident?
That's correct. With respect to Heckler, Heckler should never have been dismissed in the first place. The district court didn't dismiss Alejo's claims against Heckler under Section 1915 as frivolous. He never used the word frivolous. He never cited Section 1915. In fact, he cited the fact that Alejo didn't allege sufficient personal involvement, which goes to failure to state a claim. At that time, if that was what the district court was going to dismiss Alejo's claims on, Alejo was entitled to notice that the merits of his claims were going to be determined. Further, Alejo did satisfy notice pleading. This is a practical inquiry, whether the defendant can be said to have been put on notice of the claims against him and the grounds on which those claims are based. Here we have practical, actual evidence that the complaint was sufficient. The allegations with respect to Heckler were exactly the same as those as were alleged against Heller. Heller was able to answer the complaint with a flat denial, mostly, and not a denial based on his inability to, he had insufficient evidence to form a belief one way or another. I see that my light is on.
You have rebuttal time. You may use it, but if you do, you won't have it.
I'll reserve some time.
Okay,
thank
very
you.
Well. Mr. Hipke.
May it please the court and opposing counsel, this appeal involves an incident in which the plaintiff received an incident report for refusing to obey the order of the prison guard, Keith Heckler, to hand over his clothes during a strip search on August 12, 1994. Now, the parties have signed a pretrial order stating that is the issue that's left in this case. Now, plaintiff's appeal involves two defendants with rather similar last names, Gary Heller and Keith Heckler. As to defendant Heller, he recognizes that DeWalt versus Carter is now the law of this circuit. I would note, however, though, that there has been a Sixth Circuit case that has been released since DeWalt versus Carter, cited in footnote 3 on page 16 of my brief of Huey versus Stein.
Now that's the case I was referring to your opposing counsel. Does that directly counter our case in this?
I believe it does, Your Honor. I believe what the Seventh Circuit was saying in DeWalt versus Carter was that this exact fact situation had not come up before, and therefore the Seventh Circuit is not overruling Supreme Court precedent. And what
that's
this
not
involves.
Bad rule to follow.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
That's not a bad rule for Court of Appeals to follow.
Not overruling the Supreme Court.
Okay. The Seventh Circuit has said that in this particular case, that the nose counting approach was okay in this case. I could just quote one sentence from the Huey versus Stein case. The way they refer to it is, although Spencer, which is the Supreme Court case, may cast doubt upon the universality of the favorable termination requirement, we will continue to follow the Supreme Court's directly applicable precedent and leave to the court the prerogative of overruling its own decisions. Now, like I said, what the Seventh Circuit said was that this particular fact situation had not arisen, and therefore the Seventh Circuit was free to count noses on the Supreme Court as to how the Supreme Court would rule on this fact situation now. Even beyond that, Defendant Heller would argue that the court could, on alternative grounds, affirm the judgment for Defendant Heller. As the plaintiff points out, cases do say that you must file a cross appeal if the appellee wants to enlarge his rights. It would be my argument in this case that since, in this case, as way it presently stands, a dismissal without prejudice has the same effect as a grant of summary judgment, since the statute of limitations in this case would have run as of August 12, 1996. So from all practical purposes, there really is no enlargement of rights. As far as the factual arguments for why Defendant Heller should win on that point, I leave that to my brief on pages 17 to 23. But I wanted to spend just a few minutes on Defendant Heckler. Defendant Heckler was dismissed at the informa pauperis stage by the district court. Defendant Heckler has never been served with a copy of the complaint. What the plaintiff seems to be saying is that there is an improper dismissal without prejudice because the complaint was adequate. The first thing I wanted to say about that is simply that the plaintiff did nothing for approximately 6 or 6.5 years after getting this dismissal without prejudice. The plaintiff could have simply filed an amended complaint stating Keith Heckler violated my constitutional rights. He did this on August 12, 1994. And Defendant Heckler's in the case, he gets served, and the case goes merrily along. In fact, however, what the plaintiff did is nothing. He waited until May 17, 1995, when his case was dismissed without prejudice as to Defendant Heckler, and waited until his appeal to do anything about it. And we've cited cases that simply is not proper. Even more importantly, the plaintiff had counsel during a certain point of this time. The judge dismissed the complaint without prejudice against Defendant Heckler. I believe the date is May 17, 1995. In early 1996, a counsel was appointed for the plaintiff in this case. That counsel, John Stobbs, entered his appearance on February 14, 1996. That counsel had 2 days, less than 6 months, until August 12, 1996, 2 years after the August 12, 1994 incident, to file an amended complaint making allegations against Heckler. He simply did not do that, and he should not be allowed to come in here this many years later and state that he has a claim against Defendant Heckler. If you look at the original complaint, the reason why the judge dismissed it on informa pauperis status is that there were simply no direct allegations stating that Defendant Heckler did this or Defendant Heckler did that. On that basis, I think the court was entirely within its right to dismiss it. It was then up to the plaintiff and his attorney to amend the complaint if he so saw fit. Unless there are any further questions, that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Elgersma.
Going back to the DeWalt-Huey distinction, we would just submit that DeWalt wasn't limited to its facts. It specifically overruled Stone Bay and said that challenges to civil rights complaints relating to only the conditions of one's confinement are not habeas claims and didn't need to invalidate the underlying proceedings prior to filing a Bivens action. With respect to the enlargement of the judgment, if this court were to dismiss the case without the claims without or with prejudice, counsel suggested that it would have the same effect. But had they followed the proper procedure and filed a notice of cross appeal, Alejo would have been on notice of the things that were going to be raised against him. This court would have been on the same notice, and notice is the whole idea behind the rule that you should file a notice of cross appeal if you're going to seek to enlarge the release that was granted below. As to whether Heckler should have amended his complaint, as to whether Alejo should have amended his complaint with respect to Heckler, it's Alejo's position that his complaint was not deficient, and he can't be required to amend a complaint that was contained adequate pleadings. Also, the reading of the complaint that sees no specific allegations with respect to Heckler is only if he did name Heckler as a defendant, as well as several other defendants whose dismissals were not challenging. And then in the allegations referred to all the defendants, to Gary Heller and all the other defendants, he referred to them as John Doe's, drawing the inferences as one should at that stage of the proceeding. It would be appropriate to assume that Alejo meant John Doe's as all the other defendants that he had named earlier in that same complaint. If the court doesn't have any other questions, thank you.
All right, thanks to all counsel. Ms. O'Gersma, a special thanks to you and the firm for accepting the appointment in this case.
Thank you.